Folks, it's springtime, and this week's special at drhoffman.com is Core Restore, a one-stop shop for your detoxification needs. That's Core Restore. Look for it at drhoffman.com and come browse our full selection of great products at drhoffman.com. Click on the store. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's that time of week when we engage in one of your favorite pastimes, judging from listener response, which is Q&A with Layla, which is an opportunity for you to send us questions and we'll answer them. Layla Mutin is Hoffman Center nutritionist, and she's with me right now to field questions. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay. How are you doing?
Good, good. So, one of the things that, several things interesting in the news this week, there was a study that came out, and I forget where, but it made a big splash, which finally confirmed, once and for all, that it's not about fat, that fat has absolutely nothing to do with cardiovascular disease, fat
Yay.
Intake. Yay? Okay. But it on the one hand, it should please people like us who've claimed that saturated fats are not the culprit when it comes to cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. However, the downside of this study is that it does not acknowledge that certain types of fat are good for cardiovascular disease. And it kind of it minimizes the effectiveness of omega-3 fatty acids. It looked at a whole bunch of studies. This is a meta-analysis, of course, where they looked at a lot of studies. And based on the aggregate of these studies, they found that fat intake was not a big factor in...
Although man-made trans fats are a factor. Did they throw that into this meta-analysis?
Yeah, you know, that's the other thing, is that clearly trans fats do cause heart disease and mm-hmm. do cause cancer. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, I don't know. But at least it should... I mean, I was listening to a guy on the radio, and I know this guy very well. He's on one of the talk stations, Joe Bartlett. And the guy, you know, they read the story because they were talking about nutrition, and he said, I can't believe that. I can't believe that eating lots of steak and lots of butter doesn't cause heart disease. And really, that's kind of like the layperson's view. It's so thoroughly inculcated into the minds of Americans that they can't believe it. It's been, the propaganda has really sunk in.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. I remember myself 10 or 12 years ago looking at my plate of bacon and eggs saying, this is not going to give me a heart attack. It took a bit of unbrainwashing. It took a couple of years. I think this is still prevalent, really. It's hard because this has been so ingrained. So here we go.
Ingrained is the... That's a, you can't help but punning when you start talking about this stuff. But what you can say, though, look, on the one hand, saturated fat per se does not cause heart disease. But if you take tons of saturated fat and you eat a lot of sugar and you overeat, that could contribute to your overall caloric excess, which indeed causes cardiovascular disease. And plus, if you eat a lot of animals that are fed omega-6, corn feed and soy feed, you are what you eat eats, and you will inherit from them the downsides of all those omega-6 oils. And this week also marks the publication of a study that once and for all lays to rest the notion that if you substitute saturated fats with polyunsaturated fats, that that's a good idea, that's heart healthy somehow. And remember, you know, the Imperial margarine commercials, put a crown on your head, it's healthy.
Fleischmann's. I grew up on that.
Promise margarine.
Crisco.
It was a they promised that you were going to be healthy, and then it turned. So anyway, so this is an interesting. And by the way, I took the liberty of going to the American Heart Association website, and if you go there, heart.org, they still say reduce your saturated fat and substitute with healthy polyunsaturated fat from, among other sources, vegetable oil.
Terrible.
Right. My, you know, I do a word of the day on Facebook and on Twitter, and my word of the day for today was oxlans, oxidized linoleic acid, linoleic, I can't even remember, the it stands for the oxidized free radicals that are produced by linoleic acid, which is the predominant omega-6 fatty acid that you find in vegetable oil. And these are harmful free radical-inducing substances that damage lipids. They're responsible for what are called oxidized lipids, which we actually measure when we look at patients.
Yes.
Patients come in, and it's not just their LDL, it's their oxidized LDL.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this comes from oxidized omega-6 byproducts. So anyway, so this has been, it's been a bad week for people who propound the notion that saturated fat is bad for you, and we hope that the message sinks in. So what do we have in terms of questions?
Let's see here. I have one. This is again from somebody named Akia. Good morning. She says, I do not eat red meat, and recently I have cut back on chicken and turkey and rely on my protein mostly from fish and protein powder and supplements. My local health food store suggested that I take carnosine that is found in red meat and is a nutrient that is low in vegetarians or those who do not eat meat. I've read that it also has an anti-aging effect. Can you tell me what amount would you recommend for the average vegetarian? I'm an athlete as well. Thank you for your time.
Okay, so you know, we can look at some of the, let's step back and look at what are some of the things that are missing from a vegan or vegetarian diet.
Definitely iron sources, heme iron sources, B12, maybe some zinc, selenium to a degree, unless they're big fans of Brazil nuts. But she is having fish, which is good, and some protein powder. So she's not vegan, she's vegetarian. And I wonder if she means carnosine or carnitine.
Well, yeah, carnosine is a related compound which has anti-aging effect. There are even carnosine eye drops that purport to reverse cataracts. They, in my opinion, they don't. But it's more of an anti-age thing.
Mm-hmm.
Advanced glycosylated end products get reversed by carnosine in the body. I'm not sure if that's one of the things that is deficient if you're a vegetarian, though. It sounds like, you know, chili con carne, carne, carnivore.
Yeah.
That's the root of, I guess, the Latin word for meat or meat eater. Carnosine deficiency, I'm not sure if it's worse in vegetarians than in meat eaters. Carnitine is a little bit low sometimes in vegetarians.
Yeah.
But actually, carnitine is not an essential nutrient. It can be synthesized in the body precursors. I think lysine is a building block for carnitine. But we use extra carnitine in certain conditions to boost energy, muscle, support muscle function, reverse fatigue, say, in cancer patients, to enhance brain activity when you use acetyl L-carnitine.
Yeah.
But carnosine is one of those, I think it's one of those nutrients that's sort of at the edges of the nutrient solar system, like the planet Neptune. I think it's a promising nutrient. I'm not sure if it's something that all vegetarians must substitute, and we need to learn more about it. It does have antioxidant effects, and it's highly touted by some people. It's on my radar screen, but it's not one of my, it's not in my inner circle of key nutrients like coenzyme Q10 or carnitine.
Sure. I agree about the carnitine as well. I think anybody would benefit from carnitine.
Yeah, I mean, certainly
for fat burning metabolism, for athleticism, for thyroid issues like STORM. Remember, we were talking about thyroid a while back.
Yes, it regulates the thyroid.
It can help regulate it. So,
yeah,
it is important.
But carnosine, you know, a little less so. Okay, so I remembered the initials here. OXLAM stands for oxidized linoleic acid metabolites. These are byproducts of linoleic acid, which is the predominant omega-6 in vegetable oil, in corn oil, safflower oil, soy oil. And you get these OXLAMs, and these OXLAMs, actually I put up a picture on Facebook and via Twitter, which shows literally how cholesterol particles are damaged and rendered more dangerous because they're oxidized LDL particles. They're actually complex structures of different fatty layers and different constituents. Almost like little cells unto themselves, tiny, tiny cells. And these cells become damaged by the oxidized lipids.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's OXLAMs for you. And ox lambs are probably worse for you than saturated fat.
You know, this also relates to the vegetable oils that we consume that American Heart is still saying is good for us. Just the process of extraction of vegetable oil. And this is really, people need to know this. It's normally done under high heat conditions with a metal catalyst such as nickel.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of the extraction process for say canola from rapeseed,
right.
or soybean oil or cottonseed, any of the other vegetable oils we're talking about, corn oil and so forth. What you're left with after that extraction is a gray, cloudy, odorous product.
Hmm.
Not quite ready for consumption. So what do they have to do? They have to deodorize it. They have
to bleach it. Yes.
They have to do all of these things. Why are we ingesting this stuff?
And this came up in a recent podcast I did with T.J. Robinson about olive oil that he seeks out in all these remote parts of the world where they have artisanal olive oil. And how freshness is really important, and how the extraction process is very important, and how keeping and storing small quantities is important, and having it in dark bottles so it's not damaged. It's a very fragile oil, unlike the stuff that sits on our store shelves that has a shelf life for years. You could put it in a bomb shelter if you're a survivalist, and in 2018 it'll still be the same. Those oils are not right. Mazola, it's not the monounsaturated fat. It's those beneficial polyphenols that are very fragile.
Yeah.
Things like oleuropein and hydroxytyrosol that have so many health benefits. All right, I've got one that is an interesting one. This guy posted this on my Facebook page and posed the question. Ignatius asks me, I recently received a copy of a newsletter from Dr. David Brownstein entitled Fish Oil Pills, Ineffective and Dangerous. He is touting the parent essential oils described by Professor Brian Peskin.
Oh, I remember him.
Remember him? Yeah. Do we do away with fish oils and go with PEOs? All right. This Brian Peskin guy is a very pesky character. In some ways, I think he has a little bit the aura of this guy Kevin Trudeau, who is a great con man, who recently was indicted for fraud. And I think he was levied with the biggest fine ever in the field of consumer fraud, something like $67 million in fines, because his ill-gotten gains were in real estate frauds and get-rich-quick frauds, but also he was the author of many health books and purported to show that this, that, or the other thing could save your life, and that the medical establishment was trying to hide these things. And he actually hit on some things that were useful, healthy diet, certain things about exercise, but he had a lot of ideas that basically he tried to market and sell, making a great profit. Now, Brian, I'm going to read this. This is not ordinarily a source that I quote, because Quackwatch is a group of people who basically hate complementary and alternative medicine. They never met a supplement that they like, or they complain that acupuncture and chiropractic are quackery. These people I don't like. However, they have amassed some information on this individual, Brian Scott Peskin. They say is that he is the purveyor of what's the question?
He's actually not a medical person.
No,
he's an engineer.
He has an electrical engineering degree.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's one. So he sells a lot of products. Number one, and he also purports to say that fish oil is bad for you, and that we should use what are called parent essential oils, which are from plants. Here's some background on this individual. In March of 2002. The Texas Commissioner of Health ordered his company to recall all Radiant Health, quote, herbal essence products that were commercially distributed. They charged his company with making misleading claims. His company is facing a private lawsuit charging them with fraud. And, look, that doesn't necessarily make him wrong, because actually Some of the best people in complementary alternative medicine have been featured in Quack Watch. I once made the pages of Quack Watch, but when I wrote them a letter saying that what they said wasn't true, they retracted the article. So
they at least did that. Okay.
Yeah, I'm like I'm on their B list. I'm not on their A list. You know, there are other people like very, very prominent. They would say Dr. Oz would be like he'd be number one on their hit parade. Andrew Weil. So I don't really agree with those guys, but interesting background on this individual. But the best critique of Bryant Peskin comes from our friends at Weston A. Price, who we like.
Yes.
Like those people because they recommend a diet that's like a natural diet that consists of grass-fed animal protein, vegetables, healthy fruits, unpasteurized dairy products if you're not allergic, and so on.
Traditional foods.
Traditional foods. Okay, so we like these people. So here's what they say about him. In Bryant Peskin's world, it's all very simple and straightforward. He's right and virtually everyone else is wrong. He is very clever at mixing facts and fiction. Sadly, the facts aren't originally his own, but the fiction is. And what they're saying is that his basic pitch is that PEOs, parent essential oils, are healthy for the body. Now, these are the self-same, some of them, omega-6 oils that are implicated in oxalams, linoleic acid.
Yes.
So that's the science on that is very bad. However, Peskin says that long-chain omega-3 fatty acids like EPA and DHA are toxic. He says that DHA, which is found in fish oils, are poisons. Quote, he says he uses the word poisons. And he never distinguishes between highly processed fish oil and low-temperature produced
Or mercury-laden fish oil.
Right.
Or?
He says it's all poison. Mm. And he thinks it's all harmful for you. And he's got a product to offer people, which is his own version of these plant-based essential fatty acids. So, I think what he's done is he's sort of drafting on this phenomenon of the popularity of the essential fatty acids. A lot of people believe that fish oil is healthy. But he's saying, no, this is bad for you. Use my oils instead because they're healthier. And he's just plain wrong. And also, he's by virtue of his history and the fact, I don't want to, these are all allegations. I don't know if the facts are as is stated because Quack Watch tends to paint people with a broad brushstroke. But I got to say that his economic motives and his academic credentials and his history of prior involvement with companies that have been subject to fraud allegations doesn't do him or his arguments a lot of credit. But you see, it does get people's attention.
Yes.
Because somebody wrote me and said, what do you think? It sounds...
Yeah.
I mean, even
bad PR is still PR.
Yeah. So. And you're getting the word out and you're going to nibble away at this vast marketplace for healthy vitamins and supplements, and you can make a living that way. So that's my take on it. Now, do you really want to know what I think about him?
No,
because I wouldn't pull any punches in my assessment. I just think he is a real pesky guy, Bryant Peskin.
Yeah.
All right, what else we got?
Let's see here. I've got this is from Judy. I have just been diagnosed with AFib. And I'm on a combination of drugs plus Coumadin. I would like to use chelation therapy in addition to the meds. Should I? Could I? Wisdom of discussions with my conventional cardiologist.
Okay. So atrial fibrillation, of course, is a condition where the heart has an irregular beat. And it's necessary to go on a blood thinner because you can throw a blood clot to the brain and have a stroke. So that's why people are on Coumadin.
Why are we still on Coumadin when there are other newer...
Well, I'll tell you why. Because when they came out with all these new drugs, and they said Coumadin will be... This is always the way it is, and I get excited. I somehow succumb to this medical excitement about new drugs. Because Coumadin's a bad drug. It's a drug where if you take too much, you can bleed to death. If you fall and hit your head, you can have a...
It's rat poison.
It is rat poison.
It's warfarin.
But it thins blood. that's how it kills rats and makes them bleed to death. But you have to be exceedingly careful. You can't use too little because it doesn't work, and if you use too much, you bleed to death. And you have to get tested repeatedly, so it's a nuisance. And patients who take it say it causes terrible bruising. I see this in my office. And so we welcomed the advent of new drugs that were going to be in advance. However, these new drugs have problems. Hmm. And one of the problems is that when you start bleeding on those drugs, because they're blood thinners, it's very hard to reverse the bleeding. And at least with Coumadin, you give a common vitamin. You give vitamin K, uh-huh, and you stop it dead in its tracks.
So vitamin K isn't going to stop something like Plavix?
Plavix is a different thing, but we have actually a whole raft of new drugs for atrial fibrillation.
Pradaxa,
very good, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, I was at a cocktail party, and I was, you know, doctors tend to gravitate to one another at the cocktail party. So you find each other, we start talking, we start bitching and moaning about Obamacare and about, you know, how medicine is changing, and, you know, we have these conversations. So I said, look, you're a cardiologist, and, I'm hearing all these great things about these new drugs, these new blood thinners. And a cardiologist says to me, he says, I rarely use them. He says, we have been warned by our malpractice carrier to be very careful about using these drugs.
Wow.
Because they may engender in the future a lot of lawsuits because people are having problems on them. There are complications occurring. And so at least we know, you know, it's like the choice between the devil you know and the devil you don't know. Mm-hmm. At least we know Coumadin. We know its limitations, its side effects. It's been used for eons. It's been used well before I was even a medical student. Mm-hmm. And the newer drugs may be fraught with problems. Now, it may turn out that these concerns are exaggerated or newer drugs will get rid of the problems. But so far, anyway. So that's the wrap on Coumadin. Now, coming back to the question, can you get chelation therapy? The answer is yes, you can get chelation therapy when you have atrial fibrillation. There's no problem with that.
Even while on Coumadin?
Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What chelation does is it temporarily thins the blood a little more, mm-hmm, during maybe the space of 4 to 6 hours after chelation. So generally, we want to make sure that people are on the proper dose of Coumadin, not too much. But it works fine, and generally the people who are on Coumadin are people who have heart problems. So, you know, how could we not offer them chelation therapy? Chelation therapy in a recent study, as you know, has been demonstrated to be helpful for people in the aftermath of heart attacks, preventing subsequent repeat heart attacks or need for bypass surgery or revascularization.
So AFib, I've come to know in the past that it can be set off by unstable blood sugar. But what are some of the other causes of AFib?
Well, it actually occurs because of a faulty electrical system in the heart. Mm. So not everybody, when they're hypoglycemic, gets an arrhythmia. But when you have that faulty electrical system, it's like a loose wire, and it is subject to various forms of stress. So if you have too many cups of coffee, if you're too stressed or adrenalized, if you overexert, if you have too much alcohol, mm-hmm, if you have a hypoglycemic episode, these can all predispose to bouts of atrial fibrillation. And low magnesium, low potassium will make it worse for sure. Lack of essential fatty acids may predispose.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the factors the notion is that atrial fibrillation sometimes is fixed and there's nothing you can do about it. It just, you're stuck in atrial fibrillation. But people are in and out of it. We can sometimes prevent bouts by using the right nutritional program, diet, and certain supplements, among which coenzyme Q10, I think, plays a role as well. But magnesium is very key. And in fact, the magnesium that you get in chelation therapy could be helpful at stopping atrial fibrillation, because that's something that goes in the chelation bag.
Uh-huh.
All right, so logical point to conclude part one of this Q&A with Layla. When we return, we're going to answer a question from a listener who's concerned about the daily multiple that her 13-year-old daughter is taking. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.